Welcome to Stunt Stories, everybody. Hey, this is going to be a real special episode because I've got a real, real good friend of mine. I've known for, gosh darn it, about 40 years. Just an incredible stuntman, second unit director, producer. He goes all the way back to 1972 when he did a movie called The Honkers. And he did Three Warriors, Death Sport, The Driver, one of my favorite movies ever, Urban Cowboy. He did Roadhouse, Speed, Independence Day. He was in The Patriot, did Gods and Generals. We worked together on The Island and Transformers and Longmire. My good friend, Chris Howell. Chris, thank you for being on Stunt Stories.
Hey, thank you for having me, Corey.
Where are you now? You are on location or are you back home?
No, I'm back home in southern Utah right now.
Chris, I got to take you back to 1972. The Honkers. What was that your first movie you ever did?
No, the first movie I ever did was called King Gun that Red Morgan was a stunt coordinator on, and it was shot in New Mexico. And he took me on location to do it. But actually, the very first one was a rodeo movie that Walter Scott was stunt coordinator on, and he tapped hard lead me to ride a bull.
That's right. You were a professional bull rider for many years.
Yeah, I was more into rodeo than anything else, and I got very lucky and got into the motion picture industry because of Walter. And I believe the name of the movie was Narrow Chute, and this bull was kind of a freak. He had a big abscessed lip, so he looked like he had a chew of Copenhagen in him. I'd ridden him once, and he'd only been ridden three times. So Walter was nice enough to hire me, and I rode the bull and bucked off and hit the spot, and everything worked out well.
Wow. And that was your first movie?
That was it. You know, and I did some cowboy stuff. I worked for Red, who was a big asset to me. Red Morgan was a very generous man with his time, and he had fallen horses and jumping horses, and he had an arena in his backyard where he lived in Tarzana. And he just would spend a lot of time with you and showed me how to do a lot of things, worked on saddle falls and all kinds of stuff, and gave me a beginning of learning how to fall horses. Jerry Brown actually is the one that critiqued it. Jerry Brown was a fabulous stuntman and great Western guy who was really a good teamster and really knowledgeable about falling horses. He helped me also.
Yeah, for a while there in your career, you were pretty much doing the majority of your jobs were Westerns, were they not?
Pretty much. Yeah, I got very lucky. You know, way back then, it was still acceptable if you stood in for an actor on a TV series that you got to do a stunt. And I did a lot of stunts on Alias, Smith & Jones. And then I decided that I didn't want to work extra anymore, and I moved on.
That was a great show.
It was a fun show.
I used to love watching that show.
Peter Duell and I were really good friends. We started out a little rough, and on another show, he was making some cracks about the Vietnamese War, and I kind of always had sort of a patriotic outlook on life and got in his face about it. And like so many good relationships, why it turned around into a very close friendship. And he was really a good guy. And Ben Murphy also, terrific guy to work with. And we were all young guys and fairly athletic and had a lot of fun.
Now, is there in your career, is there a stunt? You probably ask this all the time. Is there a stunt that you'd say was the most dangerous stunt you did? And I'm going to assume it was horse related, but I could be wrong.
You know, it's funny because the ones I've got mashed on weren't usually very dangerous stunts, but the things that were high risk were so thoroughly planned that, you know, they all the ins and outs were compensated for. I guess my first big stunt was when I doubled James Coburn and did the hang up on the bull and the honkers. And the bull was supposed to spin to the left, and I ran down my left hand. So I was going to buck off on the right and be outside of it. But the bull turned back to the right. Jerry Gatlin was a stunt coordinator. And I'll never forget, he's yelling off, "Buck off, buck off." And I kept looking down there, not wanting to go down the well. Finally climbed down in there, and the bull, oh, he had pretty good sized horns, and I was standing close, and the horns kept whacking me up flat across the back. And then finally, the deal I made to do the hang up was that I could pick the rodeo clowns they used in the film, and I'd ask for Chuck Henson and Larry McKinney, who were both fabulous bullfighters and clowns. And Chuck ran in to pull my tail of my rope to get me loose, and I braided a flank release into my rope, and I just pulled that, and the whole rope came off in his hands. And the story sequence was supposed to be, he was doubling Slim Pickens, and the story sequence was that he got Coburn loose, which was me at the time, and then the bull knocked him down, and then Coburn comes in and takes the bull off of him. And the way it worked, it was really strange, but they had a ton of cameras on the shot. And when he grabbed the rope and it all came up his hands, it made him blank for a second because the rope was supposed to stay on the bull, just to get my hand loose.
Right, yeah.
And the bull came around and whacked him and knocked him down. And I stepped between him and got a hand on his head and turned him off. And then McKinney took him off of me. So in essence, they got all the story points in one shot that they needed to get. And it was blind luck. It really was. But it's interesting because the line producer came up, Elliot Schick came up to me and he said, "Look, if the super high speed camera didn't work, and we want to do this again, but I don't have any money to pay you."
Okay.
And I said, Well, that's okay, Elliot. I said, "I'll tell you what, you get on that bull and you show me exactly what you need me to do, and then I'll do it." And they were real good with everything. They decided they didn't need it. So,
yeah, you know, it's surprising how the reaction from people, I don't care what sport you do. If you're an MMA fighter, you're a football player, whatever you do, that's dangerous. You think's dangerous. Go climb onto the back of a 12 or 1600 pound bucking bull, strap your hand onto him, onto his back, and open the gate. And then you'll see what danger really, really is. Cause man, as you know, you've been stepped on, I'm sure. And hooked. I had a accident on Pee Wee's Big Adventure and got hooked in the back of the head and knocked unconscious and had to be wheeled into the hospital emergency room, just like Pee Wee Herman. It was humiliating. Not cool at all, you know.
Oh shit!
But
Pee Wee clothes. I think that's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah. But gosh darn it, yeah, that bull riding, that's a dangerous. I was never very good at it, Chris. I had some friends of mine told me, even like Gary LaFeu mentioned, you said that you should have been a world champion bull rider.
Oh, that's very kind of him. But Gary was very instrumental, and I was fortunate enough when I was very young and starting to rodeo, I spent a winter with him at his folks' house when his dad was the cow boss on the Sway Ranch. And Gary had a couple practice bulls, and we'd get on them 2 or 3 days a week. And this was way before he became the guru of bull riding teaching. And we figured a lot of stuff out together, and he was dear friend and still is. We talked not too long ago.
Yeah, he's a good human being. Good guy. Hey, so Chris, how would you say, how do you, you've seen it from old school, how the stunt business used to be back in the day. And now the way it has evolved with the CGI and all the, if you feel it's gotten less dangerous, or what's your opinion on the way how the stunts being performed, how it's evolved today?
CGI is a huge benefit to us. It makes them take action to the next level. and maintain the audience's interest greater. I've got a strange philosophy about stunts. If I'm fortunate enough to be the stunt coordinator on a film and you walk up to me and say, boy, the stunts were great, then they didn't work. Because that meant that they separated themselves from the characters. And if you're oblivious to the fact that they were stunts because you believed everything that you saw was done by the characters. Now, there's exceptions like the Bond movies and stuff where that's a big part of it. But, you know, I did the Moonlighting TV series for 5 years and people said, well, there were no stunts on that. And I said, thank you very much. But when I had Ki Johnson 5,000 feet in the air on top of a hot air balloon and we shot across him on a airliner flying to San Francisco as he's waving to him and then got the reverse. I mean, I thought that was a pretty good stunt. Wow. So, and then how he got there, there's a little bit of a story to that. We're in a production meeting and I said, well, you know, when Bruce grabs a hold of the rope, trying to hold the balloon, have Sybil grab him around his legs and let's pull his pants off. And they said, yeah, and he'll have boxers on with big hearts on them and we'll all laugh. Well, I didn't realize that it's about 180 degrees on top of one of those balloons because the hot air is what makes them float.
Oh, so, yes.
Wow. And so when that was brought to my attention, I thought, oh, crap. So it cost the studio about $9,000 to have some legs built that Ki could slip into that were made out of the same rubber that the firemen masks were made out of for their breathing apparatus and stuff, and then the hair and the veins and everything put in. So I wasn't a big hero at the moment with the line producer.
With your idea.
Yeah. But, you know, Ki, I was very blessed. I gave Ki his first job, and I'd known him from where he came from in Colorado, and he came down, and I got him working extra, and then I had him wrangling the airbags and stuff on the pilot for Moonlighting, and there was a deal where this ladder sticking out off of a parapet about 60 feet in the air, and I'm directing second unit, and I was doubling Bruce for the shot. And I wanted to see through the lens and just jerking off, really not an ounce of sincerity. I said, and the bag was up. We had a catcher down below, a safety catcher. And I said, Ki, walk out on the end of that ladder and jump up and down, which was about 8 feet from the edge. He just walks out there like a big old pup and just jumps up and down, not like it's a diving board. And I said, yeah, now Ki, get down here and put these clothes on because you just got a new job. I couldn't do it nearly as well as he did. And that's how he got the job of doubling Bruce Willis.
I'll be damned. Wow.
We worked with him a lot and got him started doing his fights and his car work and all that stuff. And he became a real asset to the stunt community.
Yeah. You launched his career. He was an extremely talented guy.
And a good guy.
Yes. Yes. Much like Jason Rodriguez, who was on my show last week, and he just bragged about you and how much you did everything for him to help establish him as a stuntman and launch his career and taught him so much. You've taught a lot. I've learned from you. I've learned so much from you, Chris. Every day I work with you, you know, I'm picking up stuff, whether it's about camera or about how to set up a stunt. And it's thank God there's people like you that want to share that knowledge and that wisdom with others.
You know, I was really blessed. Charlie Paterni taught me a lot. Everett Creech was very instrumental in my career. I had the good fortune to have had a great relationship with Hal Needham, and he showed me a bunch. Billy Burton, really a knowledgeable stunt coordinator, not just, you know, and so diversified as far as he could do everything from motorcycles, cars, horse work and stuff, and he hired me a lot when I was young, and I learned a lot from him. Gary Jensen, who was doing BJ and the Bear, he and I were good friends, and I worked a lot with him and stuff. We'd done so many fights that we did one time where we never even got a chance to rehearse it. We just walked in, and he started calling off the shots, and we both knew where the cameras were, and they got it in one take. I mean, it wow. was just. But I want to go back for one second probably the most dangerous thing I ever did, and it wasn't supposed to be, and you were there.
Oh.
Is when we were on the Fisher King, and I was riding that big old Percheron that weighed about 2,100 pounds, and I had all the clothes on, being the Red Knight. And I'm literally tied into the saddle because I've got all these various apparatus to make flames come out of the helmet and Freon to come out of the nose of the horse to look like steam and all that stuff. And they had a pyrotechnic effect behind the horse, and it spooked him, and he ran off. Now, he couldn't run fast enough to scatter his own poop, but I couldn't slow him down. And I could see Broadway. It was two blocks up. And the last thing I wanted to see in my life was going to be a taxi driver with a turban on his head as I came crashing through his windshield when he took the legs off from underneath his horse.
Oh, my God.
And I was really pulling and doing everything I could think of, and I'll never forget it because it's my favorite producer story all at the same time. But the Saab was parked out with the front end kind of nosed away from the curb pretty good, and I was alongside him, and I just grabbed that right rein and jerked this horse as hard as I could, and he ran into this Saab, took his front feet out from under him a little bit, and caved the roof in completely down the steering wheel. Now he's spinning and kicking and doing nothing. Gil Combs ran in there and grabbed him, and we got the horse stopped.
Whoa.
And so it was you and Gil Combs and Jeff Dashnow and a bunch of other great guys that were there on that job.
Man.
I think John Brimley, I think, might have been there. But had that horse gone another 300 feet, I'd have gone right out through live traffic. So that ended up being a very frightening thing. It wasn't as it turned out, it was fine. But Deborah Hill was a wonderful lady and producer who gave me a lot of opportunities and a good friend. And I'll never forget it because it epitomizes the line producer mentality. And she would line produce as well as creative producer films.
Oh, really? Wow.
And she comes up to me and she says, why'd you hit the Saab? And I said, well, I thought it was a better idea than going into Broadway and having the horse's feet cut off. She said, no, I understand that. But she says, don't you see there was a Volkswagen three cars farther down?
You could have hit the cheaper car.
God bless her.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Chris, what stories can you share with us about one of my favorite movies of all time? Urban Cowboy. How is it working with John Travolta and Scott Glenn? And
gee whiz, it was a great experience. Jim Bridges, the director, was a wonderful guy. And Winger, God bless Deborah's heart, she was fabulous. And I can share a few stories about that. It's interesting because in the beginning, they took the El Toro bucking machine and they just had a handhold bolted into it, and it would just jerk the snot out of you. So I put a bareback rigging on it so that we could get a little bit of relief from the jerk. And they took it up to Travolta's place in Santa Barbara. And they sent up the effects guy who operated the bucking machine and some other people. And we'd go out there at Johnson and we'd rehearse every day. And he was very apprehensive about riding it with any kind of speed. They had a variable speed of 1 to 12. And I could ride it at an 8 or a 9 with no hands and just put my hands behind my head. I mean, it wasn't a hard thing to ride. But it was something that John had apprehension about. And I brought Tommy out, my son, who is C. Thomas, for those of you that don't know. And I think he was 11 years old at the time, or 12 maybe. But he was real active in junior rodeo, and he rode steers real well. And I threw him on it. I bet the effects guy he couldn't throw him up. And I told him he can crank it up to 11. Well, Tommy just laughed and giggled and kicked this thing around. But the psychological effect that it had on John, where he realized it wasn't about strength, but it was about timing, because nobody had any better timing than Travolta. I mean, Travolta could dance and move, and once he learned that and learned to keep yourself out over the front end a little bit, he never was doubled again on it. I mean, he did all that stuff in the movie himself and made me look like $9 million. And
yeah, he looked like he was the real deal. You know, what about Scott Glenn? Did you teach him too, or did he have a background in riding bulls?
None whatsoever. Scott came out. It was kind of interesting because Jim wanted me to read for that part of Wes Hightower. And this movie was a huge career move for me as a stunt guy. And I never liked acting. I've never been very good at it. And some guys used to like to trap me into doing it just because they saw that it was fun to watch me struggle. Good friends like Peter Warner and stuff. So Scott came out and we were in pre-production and he and I hung out together. And I gave him some lessons on the bucket machine and stuff. And I changed his style so that I had Travolta riding everything loose and with a lot of balance and stuff. And we made Scott, because of his character being of a different mentality, where he did a lot of it with strength and things. With Scott was a fabulously strong guy. He was a rock climber, and his strength proportion to his body weight was just unbelievable.
Well, he used to be a boxer as well.
Yeah, he had 20-something extra. He also was in Forest Recon in the Marine Corps. Scott was nobody to mess with. And turned out to be a really good friend of mine. I did another film with him later on called All My Heroes Are Cowboys, and about riding bulls. And Scott was really straight, easy to communicate with. On Urban Cowboy, there's a scene at the prison rodeo where Travolta and Deborah Winger go to watch the rodeo. And Scott's got to ride a bull, and I double him riding the bull.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And actually, I got to get on three bulls because Bridges kept betting me $500. I couldn't ride him again. And finally, the producer came over and said, "That's enough of this crap," because the bull was. But so when Scott's close-up came to get on, he climbs over the chutes and stuff. And I put him on a bull and showed him how to warm up the rosin on his rope and slide up to nod his head over to stock contractor in Pasadena's place. So it wasn't something he didn't know, and it was a comfortable thing for him. And this bull was pretty gentle that we had him on, and he slipped down and he got on him. And anyway, he hung a spur in the sunbuck and the bull reared up, and Scott's standing on his back, punching him in the neck, and the bull's horns are so big that they caught where he couldn't get pinned. And I grab him and jerk him out, and I'm just scared to death. And the cameras are still rolling, and he gets back down and does his job and slides up and nods his head, and that's a cut. But it really made the scene purely a freak deal, and one of the few times that I couldn't talk. I mean, my heart was in my throat.
Wow.
But and he never thought it was a big deal. I mean, and this character was supposed to really stand out. This is the first time we ever see Wes Hightower in the movie. And this certainly made that scene work.
Yeah, damn. But, hey, who did the stunt doubling John Travolta when he falls off the tower? Or he gets his leg hung, something like that?
Yours truly.
Did you really?
Yeah, there's another story to that. Jim Bridges co-wrote the story, the screenplay, and they've got it where Travolta goes to the bar and he gets drunk and he gets beat up by Scott Glenn, and then he goes to work and he's working up on the tower, and he kind of gets dizzy and stumbles and he falls about 10 feet and he lands on another tower and he gets up and he gets dizzy and he falls again. And it just seemed contrived to me. I didn't like it. I went and I told Jim that. And he said, "Well, give me something better." And he walks off. So I climbed up on the cat cracker and I just took a piece of rope and I tied it around my waist and ran it down my pant leg and tied it off to this cat cratcher. And I had a bullhorn, and Jim's coming back. And I, Ronnie Burke, who one of my dearest friends, and we worked on so many films together. And I always knew that I couldn't have had a better safety guy around me than Ronnie ever. And he was up there to help pull me back up. And I said, "Hey, Jim, will this work better for the scene?" And he looks up, and I'm up about 60, 70 feet. And some kid was, they had buckets of mud, and they kept plastering this thing. I said, "Hey, Joe, sling me some mud." And he swings this bucket of mud over to me on a rope from up above me, and I reach out to get it, go, oh, and I do an ole and go over backwards. I'm hanging there by my foot. And I still got the bullhorn. I said, "Now, how's that work for you?" Bridges is down on his knees, striking his heart. And he's being very profane about how he felt about the way that was explained to him.
Oh, my God, Chris.
But that's how we designed that stunt. And then we were able to get the other actors more involved in it. I mean, the other deal. I mean, if you're up 70 feet in the air and you slip and you fall, you're not going to get up and slip and fall again. You're going to clung on. You're going to dance into the diamond plate with your fingers because you're not. That's terrifying.
Absolutely.
So we were able to get Barry Corbin involved in the rescue and all that stuff. And it worked out really, really well. And
oh, my gosh.
That's how. And then Deborah Winger's story is also real interesting about that. But Bridges loved Deborah, and Robert Evans didn't really care for her that much. And they had about three playmates there to play that part. They didn't think the part was very significant. And Bridges came to me and he said, "What can we do to make her stand out in the film test?" And the film test was riding the bucking machine. That was it. So I had an idea. And if you remember the movie, there's a very erotic scene where she does this, lays on her back and legs and stuff like that. It's kind of a trick riding sequence on this bucking machine.
Yeah, it was very sexy.
So I would, after everybody was gone, the three Playmate girls and Deborah were gone learning the basics of riding this machine, I'd get on it and try to figure out how to do all this stuff and land on my head till I got it figured out. Then I'd pick Deborah up in the morning and we'd go in early before the rehearsal. And I would show her how to do all this stuff, and she did it. An excellent athlete, really go for it. And she dialed it in. And being super smart, she went over to Johnny Lee and had him standing on the bandstand because there was no music track or anything when we were shooting this. It was just people flopping and popping around on a bucking machine. And she coerced him into playing Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places when she did her film test in the background. And it was a little tough. The routine was kind of intricate, and I stood just off camera talking her through the moves. So when they said action, I waved my hand. Johnny Lee struck up the band, and the machine started doing what it's doing. And Deborah did her thing, which wasn't riding the machine, but this very sensual maneuvers on it. And when it was over and we cut the machine, it spun on around, and I walked up to her and I said, "You nailed it, babe." And she grabbed my hat and pulled me down and gave me a kiss. None of this stuff was written in the movie until they saw that in the film test.
Wow.
And Bob Evans went nuts. He came over and gave me a big hug and said, "That's wonderful. We've got our sissy," and that's how that worked. But it was because of Deborah's hard work and tenacity that worked so well.
And your ideas. You should have got co-written by. Co-written by Chris Howell. Oh, man. I remember you and I were in, I came down to work for you in Albuquerque on Longmire. I think it was Longmire. And we sat in a coffee shop and you were telling me urban cowboy stories. I'm like, man, you know, you could write a book about all the, I mean, such a great film and stories like this for those who appreciate that movie. We just love to hear these type of stories.
There's a good story on Scott because he'd been a boxer. And I think that's what you were alluding to anyway, when you brought that up, because there's a fight that takes place where Travolta throws something and it gets on Scott Glenn and they go outside and they're going to duke it out.
Right.
And so we're outside blocking it out. And I said, so John's going to take two steps and hit you. He says he can't do it. I said, well, he can't. No, can't be done. I had too many fights. My character is an ex-con. You can't do it. I said, he can't. He says, if you can take two steps and hit me, you can slap me as hard as you want. I said, okay. So I'm standing two steps away from Scott, and I said, let's rehearse this. Are you ready? He says, yeah. But he said, I'm going to defend myself. I said, perfect. And I took the hat off, and I went to hand it to Winger, and I frisbee with this hat and hit him right in the face with it. It blocked his view, and he threw his hands up, and I slapped him.
In the face?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, why not? Perfect.
He says, you didn't tell me you were going to do that. I said, I didn't know I was going to do that till you made it where I had to think of something. I said, does that work for you? He said, oh, that's brilliant. Now I don't look like a dummy and I can kick his ass after he hits me and everybody's happy. So that's how that worked out. But, you know, actors that protect their character make us better stunt coordinators because they make us reach into the fire and come out with ideas that protect their character and still look real.
Absolutely. I know exactly what you're saying. And because, you know, sometimes you get those actors or actresses, they'll just do whatever you tell them to do. You're like, well, I don't know that your character is really a superhero. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that. But Chris, I want to thank you so much. I don't want to hog up your whole day. I could talk with you for hours. Maybe if you don't mind, I could have you back on Stunt Stories and on another episode, and we could hear some more of your awesome stories. Would you be willing to do that?
I will do that, but I want to paraphrase this with one more quick story because you were there.
Oh, go for it.
Joe Dunn took us all up to around Seattle or Portland or somewhere. We were up Pacific Northwest, and we were doing this show that he was coordinating. I don't remember the name of it now. And they took us out to this wheat field, and we were in cop cars. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And the AD says, all right, all you guys drive out and get on your marks. And I said, you might want to think about, and the guy said, just do what I say. And I was going to tell him the catalytic converters are going to set this wheat field on fire.
Which they did.
So, and I knew it was. I was trying to save him a lot of grief. And the guy was just such a turd about it. I just smiled, and we drove out there, and pretty soon everybody's sitting there. It's a hot day. The cars are idling away. Blah, 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 and all of a sudden the grass starts on fire underneath everybody's car. Now they're screaming, oh, look out, you're burning up. So everybody starts driving around to get out of there. Well, the entire field was demolished, and they had to find a new location to do this.
I remember that.
Yeah, but that was kind of fun watching everybody scramble with a trail of fire following wherever you went.
Yes, I remember circling back, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to park on the part that's already been burnt. That way it can't catch fire again. Oh, hey, Chris, thank you so much, man. I miss you. I hope everything's good with you, and you'll come do another Stunt Stories with me.
Absolutely, and I will tell you, Jason Rodriguez has been as good a friend as I've ever had in my life. And I didn't give him anything. He's earned everything that he's had. He's a marvelous talent.
He sure is. And a great guy.
And a great guy. If I had his personality or Doug Coleman's personality, I could have been a big deal.
You've got an awesome personality, Chris. You're always you're 100% honest. You're not afraid to tell anybody to their face what you think of them, good or bad. And man, you know where you stand when you're a friend of Chris Howell's, and I'm honored to be your friend.
Well, and I'm glad that you are too, and I'm honored to be yours. All right, my brother, thank you so much for this. I had a great time.
Thanks, Chris. And everybody, thanks for listening to Stunt Stories.
Bye-bye.